You are listening to the Retirement Wisdom Podcast, focusing on the changing nature of retirement today and the non-financial aspects of a successful retirement transition. Join host Joe Casey and learn from leading experts in the field and the stories of people who created interesting second acts as they share practical ideas and tips to create your own. Check out our website at retirementwisdom.com, where you can download our newsletter and other resources to learn more about how coaching can help you. The best way to support this podcast is to head over to Apple Podcasts and post a rating and a comment. It's easy and it's free. Join our conversations and get wiser about your retirement.
One thing I haven't heard people complaining about over the last 20 months or so is, I'm just having too much fun. I can't stand it. Well, today we're going to talk about fun and how you can bring more of it back into your life, beginning in the new year that's right around the corner. Our guest was hailed in the New York Times as the Marie Kondo of brains. Catherine Price is an award-winning science journalist, speaker, and author of How to Break Up with Your Phone, The 30-Day Plan to Take Back Your Life, among other books. Her newest book, The Power of Fun, How to Feel Alive Again, will be released this month, December of 2021. Catherine helps individuals and organizations create healthier personal and professional relationships with their phones and other devices, and establish best practices to encourage creativity, productivity, and mental health. In other words, she helps people scroll less, live more, and have fun. Catherine is also the creator and founder of Screen Life Balance, which is dedicated to helping people learn how to scroll less and live more. Screen Life Balance is part of Catherine's continued mission to create evidence-backed resources to help people around the world design lives in which they control their technology rather than the other way around, with the ultimate goal of increasing happiness, productivity, creativity, health, and well-being. In other words, she provides science-backed self-help. You can find her full bio and links to various resources you'll find useful in the show notes. Catherine, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
So I'm expecting this to be my most fun podcast ever.
No pressure.
I'm sure it will be. But first of all, what's the backstory that inspired you to write your new book, The Power of Fun?
Well, the backstory of writing The Power of Fun actually has to do with my previous book, which is called How to Break Up with Your Phone, which is about creating a healthier and more intentional relationship with your devices. And basically what happened is that once I had broken up with my phone, quote unquote, and I had freed up time that I previously had been spending on my screens, I had this realization that I no longer knew what I really wanted to do with my time. And this really hit me one day when my husband and I were taking a deliberate break from our screens. We're doing what we called a kind of digital Sabbath. And my husband was out of the house and my daughter, who was then a baby, was napping. And I was sitting on our couch in the same room I'm speaking to you from today. And I had this glorious hour in front of me with which I could do whatever I wanted. But I couldn't think of anything I wanted to do. I realized that without my screens to fill my time, I didn't know how I wanted to fill my time. And that really upset me and made me freak out and made me realize that I felt like I was just waiting to die. I'm very good at catastrophic thinking. And I didn't want that to be how I was living my life. So I realized, well, I need to figure out how to bring myself back to life. And that led me on the journey that resulted in this new book, The Power of Fun, the subtitle for which is How to Feel Alive Again.
So, from what I remember, fun came naturally to us when we were kids. As adults, what gets in the way of fun?
A lot gets in the way of our fun when we are adults. And I should back up and say that my definition of fun is that it's playful, connected flow. It's this very intense state of feeling joyfully alive. And I can go into more detail about that later if you'd like. But I think a number of things get in the way of adults having fun. One is that we just, at some point, start to believe that fun is childish and that that's something we had when we were kids or it's something kids do, but it's not really that important to adults. And we tend to think that it shouldn't be at the priority on the top of our priority list because we think it's frivolous. So it ends up at the bottom. We think that as responsible adults and citizens and members of society, we need to focus on the important things. And we have this kind of very zero-sum approach to our lives where we think that if we were to pay attention to fun and enjoyment, it must mean that we're not paying attention to the other things. But it always reminds me of that bumper sticker that you sometimes see that says, if you're not outraged, you're not paying attention. And I always think, well, I am paying attention. I just would prefer not to be outraged all the time. And what's more, if I'm constantly outraged and anxious and focusing on the negative, or even just focusing on my responsibilities, I'm going to be somewhat depleted. And it's very important to focus on fun so that we can fill up our tanks. And as I can go into more detail later, if you'd like, what I was really excited to discover in my research was that fun doesn't just feel good. It actually is good for us. It's deeply good for us, both mentally and physically. And it actually gives us the resilience and the energy we need to do everything else in our lives. But I think that that's one of the misunderstandings and the misconceptions that gets in the way of adults having fun. Plus, we take ourselves too seriously. Like we lose the ability to be playful. We think we have to be perfect or perform all the time instead of just letting ourselves go a bit.
And your point on attention sounds important in terms of there's really that ability to be open to what's there, but not be distracted, it sounds like.
Being able to be fully present is absolutely essential for fun. And I would argue for having a well-lived life in general. When our attention is divided and we're not fully present, then we are not actually experiencing our present experiences. We're not going to remember those things. The biggest takeaway I had from How to Break Up With Your Phone was that our lives are what we pay attention to for just that reason. If you're not paying attention to something, it might as well just not have happened. And you can see that even in this moment right now, you know, I'm paying attention to my conversation with you right now, whatever's happening on the street outside or whatever else is happening in this room, like, or even just feelings or smells or whatever, that none of that exists because I'm not paying attention to it. So that really led me to become much more intentional about how to spend my own attention. And when I realized that fun was something I should prioritize, and once I started to put my attention towards fun, I really started to notice very big differences in how I felt in my everyday life and how resilient and just happy I felt.
So you mentioned before three components in your definition of fun: playfulness, connectedness, and flow. So explain more about those three and how they interconnect.
Well, one of the interesting things I discovered when I started to write this book about fun is that there's really not a good definition of fun, despite how often we use the term. If you look up fun in the dictionary, the best definition I found is that it is lighthearted pleasure. But if you actually ask people, as I did as part of my research, to reflect on several experiences from their life in which they had real fun, I think the way I phrased it in my initial survey to people was so fun. So I'd recruited a large group of people. I called the Fun Squad to test out some of my ideas. So I said, what is an experience? What are three experiences from your life that you would describe as having been so fun? Very technical terminology. And I actually invite your listeners to do the same thing. And when I read through people's responses, it was not lighthearted pleasure. It was something much deeper and more profound. And I had a working definition in mind when I asked people that question that I was testing out. So I wanted to ask them first to reflect on these experiences. And then several pages into the survey, ask them, does my definition actually match what you just told me, as a way to check it out without pre-biasing them? And the vast majority of people said yes. So to go into a bit more detail about what do I mean by playfulness and connection and flow? Well, playfulness is a word that really tends to scare adults. We really clench up a bit when people say playfulness. And I think that might be because we just misunderstand what it means. We think that there's only one way to be playful, that you have to do like imaginative play, or you have to do make-believe, or something that just doesn't feel as appealing to us when we're older than it does, say, when we're 5 or 6 years old. And I always say to that, no, it doesn't need to be that at all. Playfulness just refers to the attitude you bring to your experience. So a sense of lightheartedness, of not caring too much about the outcome, of not trying to be perfect, because that's something that plagues us as adults. We feel that we always need to be perfect or be a professional at whatever we're doing. Connection has to do with, I'm going to define it with the word itself, but feeling connected, whether it's to the activity itself, to your environment, to your physical body, which is something we don't experience that much. But in the vast majority of cases, the connection comes from another human being, even for introverts. So feeling some sense of connection. And then the last element is flow, which is a psychological state in which you're so engaged in your present experience that you actually lose track of time. And it's the experience you get if you think about an athlete in the midst of playing a game or a musician playing a piece of music. Nothing else exists in that moment. You're completely engaged and present. And it's worth distinguishing that from what's referred to as fake flow, which is the sort of hypnotized trance-like state we get into when we consume content, for example, scrolling through news posts on our phone or binge watching TV shows. That's not the flow I'm talking about. I'm talking about an active, engaged state. And all three of those states are very good for us. There's plenty of research behind playfulness, connection, and flow, and they feel good. And I argue that when you put them all together, the result is what I refer to as true fun.
What's the most interesting thing you learned from the Fun Squad that surprised you?
I learned a lot of interesting things from the Fun Squad, but one of the questions I asked them actually was, what surprised you the most? And I found their answer to that surprising as well, which is that even introverts, when they were reflecting on their past experiences of true fun, told me about experiences with other people. And people, numerous people, said as much themselves. They said things like, I was surprised that as a self-proclaimed, I'm a self-proclaimed introvert, and yet all the experiences I just described to you involved other people. And I think that my conclusion from that is that the need for human connection is universal, but introverts and extroverts find that connection in different ways. And an extrovert might feel more nourished and connected in a larger group of people, and an introvert might prefer to have a smaller or more intimate group of people, but the need for some sort of connection is still there.
Makes sense. So you mentioned before that fun doesn't just feel good, it's actually good for you. What are some of the key benefits of fun?
There are so many. It was actually really astonishing. So I'd like to preface this by saying that fun itself should be its own reward. So fun feels good because it's fun. So there is that is worth something. But since all of us also want to have some other measure or reason to do stuff, there's a lot. I mean, some of the most powerful effects are the mental ones. The feeling of connection with other people is actually enormously important for our psychological well-being and also for our resilience. I wrote this book starting in April 2020, so really in the thick of lockdowns, and thinking about fun was a little interesting to do in the midst of the lockdowns, but it really helped me realize that having fun boosts your resilience. But there's a lot of physical effects, and I think that that's something that really hasn't been talked about or appreciated. So just as two examples, starting with connection, we think about human connection as something that feels good to us, but in reality, loneliness and isolation are physically very bad for us. There's been studies suggesting that the physical effects of loneliness and isolation are comparable to the effects of smoking 15 cigarettes a day. Being lonely and isolated actually affects our bodies down to the level of our cells in terms of how our genes are expressed, which is really nuts if you think about it. In other words, which genes are turned on and off at what time. And that makes a big difference in terms of our disease risk. So being lonely and isolated actually increases your risk for physical disease to the point that one researcher whom I quote in my book referred to loneliness as a fertilizer for other diseases. So the fact that fun makes us connected to other people, to other creatures, you know, I think you can have fun with a dog, for example, to ourselves, that's actually very important for our physical health. And another physical benefit of fun is that it reduces our stress. Playfulness, connection, and flow all reduce stress levels. And anything that reduces stress levels will also reduce our cortisol levels. And cortisol is a stress hormone, really important if you're actually running away from something. But if you're facing an emotional threat or just everyday stress of the sort that we all have been experiencing quite severely for the past 2 years, that actually causes a lot of wear and tear on our bodies and will increase our risk over time for long-term health conditions ranging from heart attack and heart disease and stroke to even dementia and cancer. So anything that reduces our everyday stress actually has the potential to benefit us in the long run. So when you put all this together, I came to what I thought for me was a very surprising conclusion that fun is actually an underappreciated or unacknowledged health intervention. And that far from being frivolous, prioritizing fun can actually be very good for your physical short and long-term health. I think that's kind of mind-blowing.
Absolutely. We have a new dog here, 10 weeks old now. My wife raises Seeing Eye, guide dogs for the blind, and she is nothing but fun. We have two other dogs as well, black labs, and tremendous amount of fun with the dogs.
Yeah, someone asked me point blank, they were like, well, can you have fun with the dog? And I thought for like 3 seconds, and I thought, yes, you totally can. I mean, and actually one example, dogs are a great example of a willingness to play. And also, if you think you're not a playful person, first of all, you can be playful. You're probably more playful than you realize, just in a different way than maybe stereotypically you think of it. But just think about how you'd interact with a puppy, or if you're a cat person with a kitten, like that's playfulness. And dogs are constantly sending out what are referred to as play signals, which are indications that they are open to and willing to play. So, you know, they'll get down on their four paws, their four legs, their front legs, and stick their bottoms in the air and wag their tail. And everyone knows that that means that they're there to play. And it's interesting to start to think about humans' play signals and how we can send more play signals into the world ourselves, which is somewhat tangential. But yes, dogs can be conducive to fun. We can have fun with dogs.
So you mentioned true fun before. I'm wondering, what's true fun and how can we distinguish it from fake fun?
I came up with the term true fun to distinguish it from what I call fake fun. So true fun is the state I was describing of playful connected flow. It's a state in which you feel joyously alive. And when you read through, as I have, anecdotes from people's experiences of true fun, it's both joy-inducing, but also, in my case, almost makes me tear up because there's really this life energy, for lack of a better term, that runs through it. It's really what makes us human. Like, you just feel this sense of shared humanity and joy running through these stories. But what I realized is that we use the word fun for all sorts of other things in our everyday speech too that do not have this joyful, life-affirming energy running through them. And it occurred to me that one of the consequences of not having a very good definition of fun is that it leaves us vulnerable to any company that wants to tell us that its products or services are fun because we don't think very critically about it. So we'll just do them and never really investigate whether they produce this life-affirming feeling that true fun produces. So I decided to come up with a term for that feeling. And the term I came up with is fake fun, which is basically the feeling, the vacant and empty feeling you get when you, for example, passively consume content for long periods of time. Social media bills itself as a way to connect with people and have fun. But in reality, we often end up feeling the same way after using social media as we do when we binge eat junk food. You know, maybe it produced a quick hit of pleasure of some sort, but ultimately leaves you feeling empty and bad. Same thing for binge watching a TV show. There's nothing wrong with enjoying your favorite TV show once in a while, but the way that the algorithms and the services are set up is to encourage binge watching. And that's a very different experience from the true fun that you experience with a group of friends doing something you truly enjoy. And the reason I think it's important to distinguish between true fun and fake fun is that once you have words to describe these two categories, you can begin to identify sources of both true and fake fun in your life and prioritize true fun while reducing or trying to eliminate sources of fake fun.
Very helpful. So you mentioned you wrote this during the pandemic, and your book has a ton of great research, but also a lot of great stories. Could you share some of the fun things you did while writing the book?
Sure. So, well, I will say first off, challenging to write a book about fun and become more and more convinced of the importance of human connection when everyone's locked down and can't interact with each other in person. I think it really made me appreciate even more how amazing it is to get to be with human beings. And I think we all have experienced that with, you know, the first hug that you gave someone after months of physical isolation. But one thing I realized in my own life that is consistently a source of fun for me is playing music with other people. And obviously that was something that couldn't be done in the beginning of the pandemic when we all were locked down, and something I deeply, truly missed. But then I realized, well, first of all, I could still do calls with my friends, which, by the way, shows how powerful, at least for me, that music is, because you actually can't play music together over Zoom or the internet because the lag makes it just doesn't work. But we still would play for each other because it brought us so much joy and companionship. But then as the months progressed, we realized, well, actually we could play music in person. We just have to do it outside in masks at a distance of some, you know, like 15 feet. And it led to these truly absurd experiences where this particular group of friends and I would get together. We did this consistently nearly every week through the entire winter. I live in Philadelphia. It was as cold as 25, 30 degrees. And I got a heat lamp and we bundled up and we wore our masks and we played music together, hot hands. We had all these hand warmers and it helped me make it through last winter. And it's something I intend to do this winter too, depending on how things go. You know, if I can't be inside with people, I will still make a point of doing it outside. And I know for me that helped me weather the pandemic winter last winter. And I know it was the same for my friends because we went through those absurd lengths to make it happen. So that's an example of what I consider to be a fun magnet for me. And a fun magnet is an activity or a setting or a group of people that consistently generate fun for you personally. And I would encourage all your listeners to think about, like, what are some of the fun magnets in your own life? You know, what are the activities or the people or the settings that are the most conducive to fun to you personally? Because while I would argue that the broader definition of true fun is playful, connected flow, that is universal, we each find it through different paths. And the better you understand what brings you or makes it the most likely for you to experience true fun for yourself, the better you'll be able to prioritize how you spend your time.
So I'm a trained designing your life coach, and I use the process literally every day to help people. Oh, it's such a great book. And I was thrilled when they started training coaches like me to broaden the impact. And so they're great to work with. And then they do a great job of keeping in touch. They have sessions with all the coaches around the world every quarter, and look forward to, matter of fact, they're having three in the first quarter next year. So they do a great job. But I loved when I came across in your book that you filled out the dashboard, which has four components of life: work, love, health, play. And you noticed that the lowest of the four for you was play, just a side comment consistent with every single person I've coached, and certainly myself. And I'm wondering now, looking back on it, fast forwarding to today, how have you brought more play into your life?
Well, first of all, isn't that interesting that as adults, we clench up at the mere mention of the word play, and yet when we actually reflect on it, our play tanks are completely empty in many cases. And just to further the backstory there, that actually was a very important moment for me in terms of writing this book, was that I was reading Designing Your Life, which I love. And I did do this exercise where you rank your, or you measure your quote unquote fuel tanks in these four areas. And I realized that love and work and health were pretty close to full, but play was nearly empty. And oh my goodness, my poor husband, because then I just went on this like 2 month, when was this? I think this was the winter of 2016. I just wouldn't shut up about my play tank. My play tank is empty. And he's like, oh my God, enough with your play tank. So it all kind of dovetailed together when I had that experience I described at the beginning of realizing I didn't know how I wanted to fill my time. That very much had to do with, well, I don't even know what I want to do for play. And when I put those issues together, I actually ended up asking myself a question that I had asked people when I was researching my previous book, How to Break Up with Your Phone, and that I encourage your listeners to ask themselves too, which is, what's something you always say you want to do, but supposedly don't have time for? And in my case, my answer was, I always say I want to learn to play the guitar. So of course, this is like literally playing the guitar, but we'll get to the broader sense of play too. You know, I play piano, I have a guitar, but I'd never learned to play it. And my grandmother had given me money for it. She played the guitar. I was very close with her. I really did want to play this guitar. So I ended up signing up for an adult guitar class that I'd found, interestingly, at a children's music studio. Because if you think about it, so often the opportunities for play that exist, the formal organized opportunities, are for kids, but not for adults, which is kind of messed up if you think about it. But this particular place had a Wednesday evening BYOB guitar class. And I started going to this class, and our only purpose, both literally and metaphorically, was to play. We were not there to impress anybody, believe me. We were accumulating some skills, but we were really there just to enjoy ourselves. And that was the experience that led me to write The Power of Fun, because I felt this just joy and this energy that came from this shared playfulness with this group of what was at that point strangers. But to answer your question, how have I incorporated more play into my life? That was the jumping off point. If you ask me how full my play tank is now, it's bursting. And the reason stems back to that decision in the moment to sign up for the guitar class. I met a whole group of new people who are now actual friends. I'm going to multiple classes per week. I've started taking the drums. I love that. We do open mics together when, you know, we've been doing them outside. I'm not sure how we're going to do it in the winter, but where we perform for one another. But playfully, there's no stakes. I never would think, ever would have thought I would perform at an open mic. That's not something old Catherine would have done. And I just did one last week, and there was this spirit of playfulness. And I would also say the acquisition of what I think of as playmates, which has a lurid connotation as adults. Oh, we were playmates. But I mean, people you play with, I think it's so important. And I didn't realize I was missing that play community. Kids have that with their playmates. They go on play dates. Adults don't have that. So to have this new community of people that I'm not super close friends with, but whom I get together with regularly to play, has obviously greatly filled up my play tank, made me more playful, but also been the biggest conduit to fun in my life.
That's terrific to hear. I'm sure you've seen this, but there are shocking stats on the amount of TV that people watch each week after they retire. And what's your advice on how to develop a healthier screen life balance?
So screen life balance is a term I came up with after I wrote How to Break Up with Your Phone, when I realized that even though my relationship with my phone was much better, I was still spending the majority of my waking life staring at a screen. And I think that's true for many of us, even if we don't watch a lot of TV. I personally don't watch a lot of TV, but I'm in front of my computer all day. So that's the origin of that term. But I think that the reason that many people gravitate towards, well, there's many reasons that people gravitate towards TV. I mean, in part, it can be legitimately really relaxing and enjoyable to watch a favorite show. So I don't mean to knock that. But, and this gets back to what I think is the importance of really honing in on what true fun feels like and how it's defined. If you really think about how you feel when you're watching TV, I can nearly guarantee you that you will not conclude that you are having true fun in the sense that we're talking about. You will not be in playful, connected flow because you're passively consuming something. The examples in which I've heard television resulting in true fun are often when the show has been a conduit to connection. So for example, I've got a friend who loves to watch cheesy Hallmark movies with her husband, and then they kind of do a Mystery Science Theater 3000 or 5000, whatever that show is, kind of thing where they try to anticipate the dialogue that people are going to say. And so they use the TV show almost as a, you know, like a prop for fun or a playground for fun. But I think people watch TV a lot because it's really easy and it's available. And at this point, the shows are designed to hook us. I mean, you can barely get the remote control in time to stop the next episode from playing because you only get 5 seconds. And I think also many of us have not put that much thought into what true fun looks like for us or what our fun magnets are. And so we just default to the easiest possible option. And that is indeed to sit down on the couch and turn on the TV because you'll find something that's going to entertain you. And again, I think that's fine up to a point, but we need to be much more aware of when that entertainment and that genuine enjoyment crosses the line into just being kind of numb and hypnotized.
We're conditioned to recoil at the word audit, but you've got in your book a really great tool, among others, called the fun audit. How does that work?
Yeah, a friend of mine who was reading this book before, like in the editing process, he's like, that doesn't sound very fun. And I was like, but I don't know a better word for this. Well, it basically is taking stock of how much true fun you are currently are having or in many cases are not having, trying not to freak out about that. And then actually going through the process that I've been describing where you look through your life and you think about a couple of experiences that you would describe to yourself as having been truly fun, where fun is the dominant descriptor. Keep in mind that true fun does not have to be profound in the moment. I know I said that often there is a profundity to it, and I mean that in more the emotional feeling that you get when you hear people talk about it. But for example, like a beautiful sunset might give me a sense of awe, but that's not fun. You can have fun singing car karaoke, which is not necessarily profound or deep, right? But it's fun. So let go of this feeling that you need to be profound or in awe or whatever, and just think about what was fun. And then once you do that, then I would go through those experiences and try to pull out some themes. Like what were the people and what were the activities and the settings and potentially physical props, you know, like a pickleball racket or something, you know, what was there that contributed to the fun for you? Because those are your fun magnets. And the reason it's really useful to identify those fun magnets is that whereas you can't plan for fun in the sense of saying on Sunday, I'm going to have fun from 3 to 5 in the afternoon. That's ridiculous. That won't happen. Don't do that. But you can put your fun magnets on your calendar. If you know, so people just keep mentioning pickleball to me, so it's on my mind. But if you know that pickleball is really fun to you and you know you really like playing it with this particular friend or group of friends or whoever you play pickleball, you can put that on your calendar. I can put playing music with friends on my calendar, so I do. So that would be the first steps I would say to people. And then as another suggestion, especially as we go into our second winter of the pandemic and there's so much unknown, is that I think often we think that fun has to be these grand experiences, this big trip you're taking or this big adventure. And then you can kind of get angry when you think, well, are we still going to be restricted? I can't have fun because I can't necessarily do those things. And that is frustrating. But I think one thing I've come to realize myself is that if you focus on fun as being the confluence of playfulness, connection, and flow, you can start to appreciate that most likely in your everyday life already, you have many moments of playfulness, connection, and flow, either on their own or in some cases at the same time. but you're not really benefiting from them or appreciating them because you haven't noticed them. Instead, we're focusing, I'm sure if I asked any of your listeners, can you list 5 to 10 things that are really stressing you out or making you angry right now? No problem. But we don't do the same thing where, you know, what's something that delighted you today? What's the last time you had fun? Describe a moment of playfulness and connection and flow that happened today. And I bet you actually can think of them, but we just don't. It can be really tiny, even catching the eye of a stranger on the street or a passing comment with someone about the weather or like a little joke or an aside. That counts.
I'm wondering, Catherine, how can people find new interests, new passions, new hobbies?
Well, one way to do so, well, let me back up and say that novelty is a very big source of fun. Trying new things is often conducive to fun. Some people find it more conducive than others, but in general, even if an experience ends up not going as you planned or you conclude eventually that you didn't really like it, there can be an element of absurdity that can lead to fun. So that's one thing to keep in mind. It's important to try new things and pick up new hobbies and activities and passions. One way to figure out ideas for how you, things you might want to try that you, but let me back up for a second. If you already know what your passions and your hobbies and your interests are, devote time to them. Those should be priorities because chances are they'll help get you into flow. And also they might be conducive to connection or playfulness. They can be definitely paths into true fun. But if you don't know what they are, you can actually use the information you just gleaned from the fun audit to help you. Because once you identify your fun magnets, once you have a sense of the activities and the people and the settings that are the most likely to bring you fun, you can start to go a little bit deeper and ask yourself, well, what were the characteristics of those things that made them fun? And I refer to these in my book as fun factors. But for example, if I look at my own fun magnets, I'll notice, well, there's a lot of music in them, as you probably have picked up on. There's a lot of creativity. There's a lot of nature. There's a lot of physicality. And I run through a whole list of possible fun factors in the book. And once you identify those fun factors, you can use those to brainstorm new things to try and new hobbies and interests and that you can experiment with in hopes that some of them will lead to passions. And it also can be a really great conversation starter with other people in your life to figure out, what are your fun magnets? What are your fun factors? How are we the same? How are we different? You know, does it explain anything? Like say you're with your spouse, does it explain anything about why like past experiences have or have not seemed fun? Does it give you any ideas for new things to try? Does it open up possibilities for you to give your friend or your partner or your spouse freedom to do something that they might find fun that you have now identified might not seem fun to you because it's not a fun factor to you? For example, is risk and thrill are two fun factors that are big dividing lines for people. Some people love it, love them. I would say they're separate. And some people don't. And once you recognize that, you start to understand better why maybe you got in that fight with your wife, you know, on that vacation 20 years ago.
And just another connection to designing your life to the book, the mind mapping tool could be an interesting way to really brainstorm some of the fun magnets and new ideas as well. Put one word or a short phrase in the center and then really brainstorm off it for a 3-minute round. And it's amazing sometimes what it can reveal and cover.
I think when I did that exercise myself when I was reading Designing Your Life, I concluded I'm supposed to be a camp counselor, like an adult camp counselor. And I will say, I do organize camps for friends over the summer. I actually have, you know, I've got this friendship bracelet on my wrist. And the reason I have that on is that I organized this summer a group of friends to go to this camp at a lake because lakes and camps are fun magnets for me. And this particular group of friends was as well. It was a lot of music friends and friends from my past. And we spent these 3 amazing days at this camp. And I can talk more about this idea, but like the idea of props for fun, I just put out some embroidery floss, like the string you use to make friendship bracelets, and a hula hoop. And I was just kind of curious to see what would happen. I was kind of in an experimentation phase. I'm like, I don't know if any of these adults are going to do anything with these things. No, I looked over whole table of people making friendship bracelets for each other, men and women. And then people were all teaching each other to hula hoop, including the least likely person on the whole trip to do it. This guy, a friend's husband who works at an oil refinery by day. And, you know, he was kind of on the outskirts a little bit. No, this guy was asking someone to teach him to hula hoop and having a grand time. And it just really made me so happy to see. But anyway, yeah, I love the idea of mind mapping. You never know what you're going to come up with. And the idea of both designing your life and of the power of fun is to just let yourself go a little bit, to have the freedom to see where you're taken if you let go of some of your self-judgment or your constrictions or your assumptions about who you are or what you do.
So in listening to you and reading your book, it's pretty clear that we have to lighten up. We have to let go to be able to let more fun in, create more space, as you write, for fun. But it also takes some work, yet we don't want to make it too much work. We don't want to turn fun into work. And one thing I've noticed you write about is something I've seen in my clients, and that's people, particularly that are professionals or specialists or experts in their field, they have a hard time doing something they're not good at, trying something new where they're not top tier, the best. How can you prevent perfectionism from getting in the way of trying new things?
I think acknowledging it is the first step, to acknowledge that you are holding yourself back because you feel this pressure to be perfect. And I certainly felt this myself with like performing at open mics. Like I had bad experiences as a kid and in high school with choking at piano recitals. And I just assumed that's what, like, I just shut myself off from that. I just thought if I mess up, I'm not, you know, I'd never got into musical improvisation because, well, A, my piano teacher is so good at it that he's intimidating. But second, I wasn't able to let myself go. So I think recognizing that perfectionism is really constricting and really holds us back and prevents us from enjoying ourselves and trying new things, that's really important. And then I think another thing is to ask yourself a question that my husband and I always ask ourselves when we're considering trying stuff, which is, what's the worst that can happen? What's the worst that can happen, say, if I did try to play a piano solo and I did mess up? Like, I'm not a concert pianist. I'm not making money off of this. It doesn't matter. I also think that trying to laugh at yourself more is really important. Be in on the joke. If you can laugh at yourself first, then you don't have to worry about other people laughing at you. And also, if you're trying something for the first time, why would you be good at it? It's not your profession. I also think finding a context in which you're with people whom you feel comfortable with is very important. And for me, for the music stuff, I found a group of people whom I don't feel self-conscious in front of. And that's really been very meaningful to me. I mean, it almost makes me choke up to think about, because the idea that I'm trying to improvise at all right now is just mind-blowing to me, knowing where I've come from in the past 2 years. And I would also say trying to steer away or get yourself away from performing for other people online is very important. And I don't know, you know, how many of your listeners are really involved in things like Instagram, for example, but that is a huge, huge problem. This sense that our lives are turned into performances and we are turned into brands and we need to humble brag to all of our friends and family and strangers on the internet about what we did. I mean, if you actually start to investigate what the reason is behind putting those posts up, I don't know. Oftentimes I conclude that we're really just trying to make ourselves feel better, in part by kind of making other people feel bad, because people give that like or that hearts or thumbs up. First of all, that's vacant praise. That means nothing. But second, do you really think that they were like suffused with joy at looking at your idealized photo of your life? No, they probably felt a little bit bad about themselves. That's not fun. But I think, I just got on a tangent there, but I think that there's a real issue for people of all ages right now of performing our lives instead of living them. And if you're performing something, you care about what other people think. You are, in some senses, adhering to perfectionism, and you're just not going to have fun. So get off, stop posting all those pictures, and instead focus on real life fun. And I think it's just so important. And also try to convey this to kids. My daughter actually has a song she learned in school. And it is, the lyrics are, "I'm not perfect and I know I never will be. I'm not perfect. I know it's true. Sisters and brothers, even dads and mothers all make mistakes and I do too." And I just love that they're learning that as a young age, especially as a girl, to not be obsessed with perfectionism. And it's a message I really want to try to convey to her as she gets older.
What a great song.
I would sing it to you, but I'm not quite at that stage in my self-actualization.
But it's clear you've had the last 2 years, a lot of great growth. Jen, that's great. And thank you for sharing that. We had a recent podcast guest, Catherine Sanderson, who talked about the research on comparison, the dangers of, as you said, you know, focusing on others. And love your advice about live life, don't perform it. Really pay attention to things.
And also, you know, connect with other people. Don't show off for them. I think that performance and perfectionism are a way of separating us. And one of the many powers of true fun is it brings us closer together. It encourages us to embrace our shared humanity. It's so much better. And it makes everyone feel good instead of feeling like they're competing with each other.
So it seems to me that 2022 is a good year to focus on the power of fun for all of us. What are the main messages you want people to take away from your new book, Power of Fun?
I think the most important message is that fun is important and that we should prioritize it, because I think that we never really think about it as something to prioritize to begin with. And the past 2 years have pushed it even further down the list. So really for people to recognize you deserve to have fun, you deserve to experience joy, you deserve to feel alive. You can still be a good and responsible person and adult and also prioritize fun and playfulness and connection and flow. And also to really, to just notice the moments that already exist, because we don't know what lies ahead. We don't know what stage of the pandemic we're getting into, but there are still moments, even if you are alone, to appreciate playfulness, connection, and flow. And I think that the more we appreciate that, the better off we'll be, and to really emphasize connection. But I think the number one thing is just to take fun more seriously and to notice when it happens. And to notice when other people are having fun and notice how that makes you feel. When I ask people in person to describe moments of fun to me, they light up. It is amazing to see, and it makes me feel joyful also. And it lasts. It really lingers. It will make you more resilient. So I think really to recognize that many of the things we do on our screens are fake fun and should not be prioritized, and recognize the value of in-person human connection and activities, and to make time for that, to prioritize it as if it is essential, because it is in fact essential for us. That's what I'd like people to take away.
Catherine, thanks so much for taking the time to share your insights. This is all very useful and sets us all up for more fun. So thank you once again. And we really come away with an understanding of how important it is.
Thank you so much for having me. And if anyone wants more information, I have resources at howtohavefun.com. And I'd love to have any of your listeners sign up there and, you know, let me know how it goes. You can contact me through that website too. And I always love hearing from people. So thank you so much for the opportunity.
And we'll have links to all those in the show notes, and great opportunity to follow up.
Great.
Thanks so much, Catherine.
Thank you.
Well, I must say that conversation was not only fun, and it's really informative. And I came away with a lot of notes, not only from this conversation with Catherine, but from reading her book prior to our discussion. And I'll share with you just a few takeaways. There are many more that you can find by reading the book. There are also links to a number of resources in the show notes that I'd encourage you to explore. And I'd also encourage you to think about something I did, which is to buy copies of this book potentially as a gift. I bought 2 additional copies because I know that they're going to be great gifts to people in my life who can use a little bit more playfulness, a little bit more fun in the year ahead. We're recording this at a time of great uncertainty. We don't know what's next in the pandemic, as she mentioned. As I'm recording this, we just discovered that the new variant has been detected in California. So we don't know what lies ahead, but keep in mind, as she noted, that these things can actually make us more resilient. But here are my takeaways. First thing is, she mentioned play is important, and we need to take it more seriously. Not only that, but we need to just dedicate some effort to it, not to turn it into work, make sure that we're working and efforting to make space for it. Takeaway 2, a question for all of us. How full is your play tank? As Catherine shared her story, from going from an empty play tank to now one that's bursting, how about you? How's yours? And what do you want it to be in the year ahead? Third, this is really a matter of attention. We can all be more discerning about how we invest our attention. It's really a precious resource. And to be more aware that there are devices, phones, etc., that are sophisticatedly engineered to hook us and distract us. But we have a choice there that's available. And as she put it, we can choose real life activities, true fun, not fake fun. And those activities tend to be more active and engaging and, no accident, more fun. So avoid the passive and dive into things that are more active and real life oriented. Number 4, the power of new. She mentioned how useful novelty is. So be willing to try new things as an experiment, not to perform, as she put it, but really just to engage in real life. And then my final takeaway is think of this as not an either or, but an and thing, A-N-D, meaning, as she put it, you can be a serious, to some degree, even responsible person and still be playful and still have fun. So it's not one or the other, but think of it as and. I hope you found this conversation as meaningful as I did. I think it's going to be top of the list of things to think about for the year ahead. You can take a look at all of our episodes across 4 seasons at our website, retirementwisdom.com. We have had a number of great conversations with many different people offering their perspective. And I think by browsing them on our website, you can get a glance of things that may be useful to you in the year ahead and maybe to others. Thank you for listening to the Retirement Wisdom Podcast. Our mission is to help people really create the retirement that they've earned and live the life that they deserve in this important phase of life by paying more attention to the non-financial side of planning for life after you leave the workplace. We'll be back soon with new episodes, and thanks again for listening.
Thank you for joining us today on the Retirement Wisdom Podcast. You can listen to all episodes of our podcast by subscribing to them on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher, or on our website at retirementwisdom.com.